You're listening to a Thames Estuary Partnership podcast, celebrating London's famous tidal river. We hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Talk of the Thames. I'm your host, Chloe Russell. On today's episode, we will be exploring Thames Estuary Partnership's pilot training project, Blue Connections. You will be joined by three lovely ladies from our team at Thames Estuary Partnership who are collectively leading the project. We are currently recruiting 16 to 25 year olds who aren't in full-time education and employment, specifically around Barking and Dagenham area in London. If you find this episode resonates with you or someone you might know, please do share Blue Connections and we would love to welcome you with open arms. All the details of the course can be found on our website on thamesestuarypartnership.org, and you can also apply through the website with a quick and easy form. I hope you enjoy listening. Hello, and a big welcome to our guests on today's episode. In alphabetical order, we have Amy Pryor, Wanda Bodner, and Yomi Ordulami. It's wonderful to have you all here today. Thank you for joining me. How are we all doing?
Great, thank you.
All good?
Really good.
Yeah, great. Well, I work with all three of you here at Thames Estuary Partnership, and I'm quite familiar with your roles. But for those that are listening that are new to the game, can you give us a quick intro of what you do at TEP? I will pass it on to Wanda.
I work as a data and training manager at the moment at Thames Estuary Partnership. Before that, I was a project officer working on the Greater Thames Estuary Fish Migration Roadmap. And I also used to volunteer before that.
Excellent. Who would you like to pass it on to, Wanda?
I'll pass it on to Yomi. Mm-hmm.
I work as the Learning and Engagement Manager for TEP.
Excellent. And you're pretty new to the game yourself, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Exciting, isn't it? Well, it's very lovely to have you here.
Thank you.
Amy, what do you do at TEP?
So I'm the technical director at TEP, and my role is very much to support the chief executive in their strategic objectives and development of work across the organisation. So really what I do is listen to a lot of different people, a lot of different sectors, the challenges and needs across the Thames Estuary, both from an environmental, social and economic point of view, and then try and join the dots and co-create with partners projects that fill a gap in knowledge or a gap in process that's really needed to benefit the Thames Estuary environment and the communities from a societal point of view along the corridor of the Thames Estuary. And we get to co-create really great projects, one of which we're here to talk about today.
Absolutely. Well, what a great lead-in. We are going to be talking about the Blue Connections project. So who would like to take us off? What is Blue Connections?
So Blue Connections is a training and skills project, first and foremost. And it rose out of recognition over quite a few years, actually, that certainly within the Thames Estuary Partnership, we have a whole host of skills that we need to have, we need to be skilled at to deliver the work that we do, to have the kind of conversations that we need to have with lots of different interests and sectors across the Thames Estuary. And we realised that actually, There's a skills deficit across London. If you look at the Mayor of London's skills strategy, it really highlights that. So within the Greater London Authority area, there's a skills deficit for young Londoners. And I chair a national network of organisations similar to the Thames Estuary Partnership called the Coastal Partnerships Network. There's 55 of the coastal partnerships around the country, and they were all telling me pretty much the same thing. So there's a skills deficit across coastal communities. There's also plenty of opportunities for jobs. Certainly blue and green jobs are on the rise, and the need for that in the face of the climate crisis is going to get ever more, is going to be a greater need as time goes by for people who want to go into sustainability and green and blue jobs. So the thinking sort of coalesced, if you like, through those conversations to say, okay, in the Thames Estuary Partnership, we have lots of transferable skills, things that can be used in any industry, doesn't have to have anything to do with the environment, that would be really useful to put out there, develop a modular training program and see if we can offer a training program that's a little bit different in that you can learn those skills you can take into any industry. You can get an accreditation and get a certificate to show that you've learned these skills and take that into either a job opportunity or an apprenticeship or a traineeship, for example. But we can deliver them with a really strong environmental message. So it's kind of a multiple benefit project, but that's quite a dry way of saying that it's sort of a win-win situation for us anyway, for the environmental sector, in that you're reaching people that you wouldn't ordinarily reach with an environmental message. And sort of secondary, but still just as important, is that the environmental sector is extremely low in diversity. It's the second least diverse sector in the whole of the UK, second only to farming. And there's lots of theories as to why this is the case. Nobody really knows an absolute answer to why that is the case. But if we're going to meaningfully work towards enhancing the environment, meeting the government targets of the 25-year environment plan, and really rising to the challenge of the climate crisis and finding solutions together, that needs to be done in a representative and inclusive way to really meet the needs of all the different cultures and diversity that make up our beautiful population within the UK. And on top of that, environmental messaging tends to only reach a very, very narrow demographic in our country. So really understanding what messages resonate with different cultures, how they value their local environment and the wider environment, like the global ocean and, you know, green spaces like parks, farms, countryside. We need to be understanding, like, why is there lower access from certain demographics? Why do less people from certain demographics look to access those green and blue spaces? What is it that's stopping them from wanting to go there or perhaps feeling like they belong there? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot in what I've just said. There's a huge amount of barriers, I think, out there, both to accessing green and blue spaces, but also to accessing meaningful training, something that can be integrated and really open out, broaden people's horizons, basically, to say there's this whole host of careers that maybe you didn't know about or haven't had a previous interest in because they're just not been accessible for some reason or another. Mm-hmm. within your community, within your culture, and understanding what those barriers are. So as a first step, We started talking to lots of different people from across the sort of London area in particular, where there's a huge amount of deprivation along the riverside. So some of the boroughs that sit along the Thames Estuary Corridor are actually in some of the most deprived boroughs in London, but also some of them are some of the most deprived boroughs in the UK. Certainly, there's a couple of boroughs in Essex that fit that criteria. And so there's a kind of coming together of opportunity. Like, there is so much nature on the doorstep along the riverside, both on the land and obviously the mighty Thames Estuary itself. And there's a huge amount of opportunity across TEPS network, where we have lots of different commercial companies, different industries, ranging across, STEM subjects like coastal engineering or planning, town planning, for example, riverside planning, right through to arts, culture, heritage, communications, you know, the list goes on and on and on. So we wanted to look at how could we create a pathway, starting with a modular training course on transferable skills, use that to try and find those people within the future trainee group to say, okay, you've learnt these transferable skills. Would you be interested in hearing more about the opportunities in the environmental sector? And so that would cover across the sort of broad spectrum of sustainability careers in corporate consultancies, for example, hardcore STEM careers within coastal engineering or town planning, for example, right through to arts and culture, engagement with local communities, and third sector in charities, like the kind of role that you could have within an environmental charity, for example. So there's a wealth of opportunity out there. And I think, partly because this is my own personal point of view, but I think, you know, everybody's got a lot of struggles going on in their lives, especially at the moment, you know, with economic issues going on the energy crisis, you know, the environment's probably quite low down in the list of priorities for most, the vast majority of people, just trying to live their lives throughout London and along the Thames Estuary corridor. So if we can, even in a small way, we can offer up training that increases their employability and helps them gain, you know, employment that they enjoy, that they can earn a wage from, help with that, alleviate some of that economic pressure, then at the same time, they can be learning more about their local environment and about the broader Thames Estuary and the global ocean.
Wow. Thank you for painting that picture. You've really just laid the foundations for everything there. Thank you. I appreciate it. There's so many things to unpick here. One of my questions is, so you're looking for a specific demographic to bring in, and there are barriers of why they feel like they can't access this sort of world. I'm curious, are you going to be asking them one-on-one what their personal barriers are and try to use that data to then move forward?
I think at this stage, the answer to that would be no, not right now. But I think what we want to do is pilot the approach. So we're aiming this at young people, specifically 16 to 25, from diverse backgrounds and from areas that have quite high levels of unemployment and have the local council, where the council has recognised that there's a skills deficit. So to do that, we looked through the indices of deprivation. We looked at different London borough strategies. There's quite a few strategies out there. And everything seemed to coalesce around Barking and Dagenham for us. You look at the sort of makeup of the population in Barking and Dagenham as a very young population, lots and lots of young people. There is a recognised skills deficit. There is a strategy from the local council to fill, to try and increase the skill level in that area. There's also a huge amount of regeneration going on. So there's a lot of new industries, new companies coming to that, will be coming to that area over the next few years. So the job market's going to really open up. And then for us, it's also an area where it has the mighty Barking Creek, which is a tidal creek of the River Roding, one of the tributaries of the Thames estuary. And we have an ongoing survey site there that we visit annually to monitor fish populations within the river around one of our projects called Estuary Edges. It's all about how you build intertidal habitat back into the urban landscape through flood defence improvements, softening the hard flood defences around London to try and build that green-blue space back into the river edge, which is really important for little fish that live in the river. They use them as nursery areas for birds, for waders, for invertebrates, for all sorts of animals. Voles, for example, use them as well. So it's really important for our biodiversity to get that habitat back into our estuary edges. Mm. So we thought it's kind of where everything seems to come together. There was a really big need, a high need. And when we talked to the local council, Barking and Dagenham Council, they were really keen and enthusiastic to see this approach kicked off.
That's great.
And so really the next stage was to find the right funder, because we had no proof of concept for this. There was nobody's done it this way before. So that's why it's a pilot. We're sort of proving that it could work and that it would have benefit for the local community. Mm. And so the reason why we're not going to start analysing, if you like, the barriers to people gaining either access to training and skills programs or into environmental sector work, for example, is because that would be the next stage. So really, we want to test pilot this modular program, get as many young people and young people not in education, employment or training at the moment to basically come on board with the training program, give it a whirl and, you know, see how it can benefit them. So really the analysis we'll be doing after this, we'll be looking into what was the impact of that approach? How can we improve it? What are our lessons learned? And possibly scaling it to another area, maybe one other area in the next phase that has similar issues. So high levels of deprivation, low levels of employment and recognized skills deficit. So we can do the same approach, but in a different area.
Fantastic. Yeah. So tell me, when does the course start and when does it end? What's the duration of the course?
So So we're looking at a start date of mid-November.
Okay, soon.
Yeah, very soon. And it will run right through to February. We are hoping to have an event in late February to introduce the trainees that complete the course with us to our network of members of the Thames Estuary Partnership and others from across the broader network that we have, to look at showcasing careers for people across lots of different areas, interesting areas of work, doing that full range. So right through from sort of comms, heritage, art, right through to the more sort of hardcore careers in STEM and, you know, the other thing, maritime industry. So really showcasing careers, profiling different people, like their career journeys, kind of skills that they needed. And at the same time, we can be asking those potential future employers whether there could be a pathway, an intake from our program into any traineeships or apprenticeships or entry-level jobs that become available within those organizations. So as a trainee coming onto the Blue Connections program, you'll get a complete beginning to end journey with us. So learn your transferable skills, potentially dip your toe into the environmental sector, and then potentially get a foothold in a job with one of our connected organizations. So it really gives them something to work towards. And at the same time, we can be understanding from those employers what their skills deficits are that they've recognized from entry-level people, from people coming in to do those apprenticeships and traineeships. So we can start to shape and craft and build on what we've done, so we can be meeting the needs on both ends. So meeting the needs of the community, but also meeting the needs of that employer network that's out there ready, willing and able to take them on board at the end.
Amazing. Well, it's such a good opportunity. I feel like I would have jumped onto this if I could back in the day. There's so much to unpack here. So you mentioned there's like hard and soft skills. I wonder, can you tell me a bit more about the modules inside the course? What the flavors?
Sure. So the idea behind putting together both the lifelong and the environmental focused modules is basically we try to implement all those things that we use and we do every single day on the job. And I also try to look at skills that are definitely needed, but may not have even if you come out of university. And also I looked at job advertisements and see what kind of skills employers require. Because sometimes I feel that there is it's not really connected well. So whatever you might learn in the university settings is not really what's required in the job sector, and vice versa. So there's a bit of a mismatch, I think. Basically, to kickstart the program with what you can learn as a lifelong skill is learn Microsoft Office. So just using the basic everyday Word, Excel, PowerPoint, which are very useful if you want to write reports or, you know, or if you use Excel to make certain calculations, or even if you need to do finances and PowerPoint, which is extremely useful if you want to communicate your ideas, provide presentations, etc. And then the next one is data science. So data science is a very much upcoming field. We all use data every day in our life, and the environment is being monitored through data as well. So to be able to manipulate the data in a sense that you manage it, you use it to visualize your ideas or your results, etc. So it's very important to be able to you know, have some of the skills where you can do that. So for example, my background is in using RStudio. And so we have a module dedicated to this where I would introduce the trainees how to use RStudio, what are the ways of getting around it, etc. And with this module specifically, we also can offer that whoever completes it will then receive a 1-year free access to this platform called DataCamp, which means that they can learn even more there, because what we can offer is an introductory phase, and then on the platform they can actually go through a proper training where they can actually take an exam if they want to, and then be certified. And it would be a proper exam with a proper certification. So it's not just a certification of attendance, but you actually go through a proper exam, which I think it's a very good way of showcasing that you understand data science and you know how to use R. The next one is GIS, so Geographic Information System. Again, this is in connection with data science. Same thing, spatial data being used every single day. We use it on our phones. So similarly, within the environment sector, it's very important to be able to highlight where, for example, you've done your fish surveys, if you want to communicate that as well. So we can offer to teach how to use QGIS and the ArcGIS products. QGIS is for free. ArcGIS is something that you need to pay for, but they also have quite cheap options. And then the last one within the transferable skills is the communication part, which is actually going to be your realm. Chloe, would you like to tell us about it?
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, the roles have switched over. So we're going to be doing a communication module, and within that, we've got a whole host of skills that we're going to transfer, including Adobe Photoshop and Illustrator. We're going to learn about the knowledge of science communication, what that means, how we can implement that in our everyday understanding. Got knowledge of what a company strategy is, a buzzword, something that we can learn from. We've got Logic Pro skill set. So that's what we're going to be learning, actually, how to be making podcasts and all the production and post-production. So Logic Pro is a software you use to edit conversations. What else have we got? We've got timely correspondence skill set, always a good one. Interview skills, always useful. If it's not for something like podcasting, it's quite good for job interviews as well, like how you can learn how to deliver a point very well, unlike what I've just done there. You're also going to learn research skills, which are great. Script writing skills, really, really fun to do. Microphone experience. We've got remote recording experience, so that's going to be really fun to do. I've got a microphone that we can play around with, and we can start testing the sounds and listening to them. But there's going to be a nice mixture of comms, which I'm very much looking forward to. Wanda, would you like to finish the field trip and environmental survey area?
Sure. So these are the lifelong transferable skills. And then specifically, we have something which is much more centered around the main centerpiece, which is the TEMS. So people can learn more about the TEMS. We've got a module which is called Introduction to the TEMS Estuary. And we are very happy to say that this module is endorsed by the Institute of Environmental Sciences, which is great. And then fish surveys can be done as well, especially around the estuary edges sites. And this is endorsed by the Institute of Fisheries Management. So whoever comes down with us can have a bit of an intro from our fisheries expert and then actually take part in the fish survey. And then the other bits are much more Amy's realm. These are the fundraising, project planning, and impactful communication as well.
Yes, the other side of this is the soft skills. So you've touched on the communications on the more creative side of the work, but there are soft skills involved in all of the hard skills that we've talked about. So what we want to do with an introduction to an environmental career module is really showcase how we use those hard skills and the soft skills in our work in the environmental sector through an environmental lens. So the soft skills are currently being mapped out by the lovely Yomi, who's on the call with us, along with an education specialist who we've worked with in the past called Kim Holt, who's based in Thamesmead. And they're really going to be signposting the different soft skills that you need in order to use and deliver your hard skills, but also drilling down into that. So After a couple of modules have been delivered, there'll then be a focus session on the soft skills that are involved in that. And some of those might be how to talk to someone in a cold call, for example, how to put together a presentation, how to tell a story about the work that you're doing, how to communicate to different people. So those are just some broad stroke examples. And then, yeah, through the environmental sector, intro to environmental sector module, we'll be showcasing basically all those skills through a deep dive into the different projects that TEP does and TEP has coming up into the future. And through that, we want to really put a strong ocean message underneath all of it, because we are all dependent and reliant on the ocean. And the ocean, having a healthy ocean, will really help us in our resilience in the climate crisis. So really, really trying to get through and understand the different messaging that works as well through working with those trainees to look at how can we enable people to feel more connected to their local environment, but also to the global ocean. And what are the kinds of things that they could be doing at home, regardless of what career they go into? But what are the kind of things that they could be doing at home and at work that can really, you know, help just that little bit towards helping our ocean be healthier and more resilient, and therefore making the planet healthier and more resilient?
Amazing. Is that where the name Blue Connections sort of originated from?
That's exactly where it originated from. I'm an ocean lover and I'm not afraid to say it.
loud and proud.
I'm loud and proud, lover of the ocean. And it's just something that I think, you know, being based in London with the Thames Estuary, which is part of the global ocean, coming in and out twice a day, all of the benefits we get from that, that I understand as a scientist, but it goes deeper than that. We all have an intrinsic, heartfelt connection to the ocean. We all feel better when we're stood next to the ocean, for example. And that ocean is Embarking Creek. It can be, you know, if you choose to view it that way and you understand it a bit better. But there's different things that will resonate with different people, and understanding what resonates, how people connect, how people value the ocean, but also the local environment, will really help us craft our future messages and craft our future projects to the benefit of everybody. Because then, you know, we can meet the community needs and the community values by bringing the ocean and the environmental values to them, and highlighting, you know, how can the environment support you in your day-to-day life and in your aspirations as a person and the things that you love. There, I think we'll find a lot of common ground and a lot of blue connections there. So that's really what's at the heart of it. But it's really trying to answer this call, helping to increase employability through skills training, but doing that in a way that really integrates that message, doing it in a much more integrated way. If you look at how training and skills is delivered, it tends to be quite siloed, and, you know, there's different industries that have their own way of doing different things. But I think there's a way that we can actually do this more meaningfully together and in partnership without it having to be an environmental, you know, project. It can be this sustainability. It's about all of us. It's about how we live sustainably on this planet. And we need to do that in a more integrated and a more nimble and intelligent way. But we need to be breaking down these perceptions that to get these more formal careers, maybe, or get into the environmental sector, that you have to have a higher education degree. You have to go through university. You have to be a scientist. You have to do umpteen hours of volunteer work for free, which, with best will in the world, hardly anybody can afford to do that, especially now. So we're just blocking ourselves off. We're not doing ourselves any favors by not opening up the way and trying different ways to provide training access, but also doing it in a way that, you know, doesn't require people to have to go through all that formal training to get a foot on the ladder in whatever career that they want. You know, you can learn on the job. You can gain these skills through working within an organization. I think employers in particular just need to be a bit more open-minded as well to how they recruit into different jobs. And I really, really want to see that our program is the start of something like that, where we can really highlight that you don't need to have a degree to get into an environmental sector career or into any other sector career, you know, that you can do across the Thames Estuary, if the employer is willing to support you on that journey. And top quality people out there are hidden. You can't find them because they, you know, maybe they don't want to go to university for whatever reason. They can't afford it, or, you know, it's just not something that's within their family, within their community, that's something that they do. We've got to be a lot more open about how we welcome people into the employment fold and open it up, break down those silos, break down those barriers, and find those people out there that, you know, want to work and want to work in interesting projects and interesting organisations that they might just never have thought of before.
Absolutely. And Barking and Dagenham is going to have the light shone on it. And Yomi, am I correct in thinking that you live in that area?
Yes, I do.
Ooh.
I'm a proud resident of Barking and Dagenham.
And so tell me, what drew you in to this job in particular, Yomi?
I think for me, it was the ability to make a difference, because I have been through it myself. I've been through that process of wanting to get back into work, acquiring new skills, you know, to match the job sets and stuff like that. So, yes, for me, that was the main draw to the job.
So it's quite a personal reflection of yourself.
Oh, yes, it is. Mm. Yes, it is.
And how about coming from the sense of local community? Do you find that that reflects in your desire to feed back to the community?
I believe so, because I mean, I've lived in Barking and Dagenham for the last 21 years.
Wow.
Almost 22 years now. So I've seen it change so much over the years. And a lot of people are being left behind, consciously or subconsciously. A lot of people are being left behind. And I think acquiring new skills, it's mainly acquiring new skills to get into employment. People put up barriers by themselves, saying, okay, I'm too old, I'm too young, or I don't have a degree, like Amy said earlier. Smash down the barriers. Smash down the barriers and open yourself up to the opportunities that are right there. So, yes, for me, the ability to engage with the community, the ability to, like I said earlier, make a difference. Because once people are able to come out of the NEETs, the Not in Employment Education and Training group, and actually get into employment or get into training, you know, it makes a lot of difference. It's progress you can track. You can see it.
That's so good. Mm-hmm. And like coming, so how many years? 20 something years you've been there?
Yes, 21.
Wow.
Almost 22 years, yeah.
Wow, you must have seen so much change.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
So much change. Now there's a lot more diversity in Barking and Dagenham than when I first moved here 21 years ago. I remember then, as there's always been, you know, just around the corner from my house. And anytime I went into Asda and I saw someone that looks like me, I always went to say hello. Now, so many people look like me. I don't have to do that anymore, you know. There's inclusion because there's a lot more diversity. You can see it. You can see it. So, yes.
And you obviously love living there, right?
I do.
It's so great to have you part of the team where that passion and drive and like just local community, like where it beats out of you. It's so nice to have that interweaved into this project. It's really like special.
Thank you. And to be quite honest, there are things we take for granted. We have so many lovely parks and you have, you know, different streams passing through. And we walk along, you know, in the park, feed the ducks. And you don't really think about the connection even to the Thames. The Thames seems so far away from you. But then all the waters always end up somehow in the Thames. So, yes.
Yomi, you're in touch with the soft skills as well, right?
Yes. So I'm delivering the soft skills models. But it's more like being signposted. It's not being delivered as a model by itself. It's more embedded in the hardcore skills being delivered by Wanda. So for every two lessons that Wanda delivers, I now deliver a lesson on the soft skills embedded in the hard skills models that she's delivered. Because soft skills are not things you really learn per se. It's what we all have, you know, because we're talking listening, speaking, problem solving, creativity, aiming high, you know, thinking outside of the box, teamwork. These are soft skills. They're also lifelong skills that will serve you throughout your lifetime, but they are acquired, even though we make use of the skills every single day. If I put it this way, if you start school, you actually start learning these soft skills. Because even children that are in reception class, they do teamwork. They learn to tidy up together. They learn to color, you know. It's all soft skills. Working collaboratively, thinking outside of the box. Mm. You know, getting them to do small projects in school. It's creativity. But we don't recognize them as core skills or soft skills. So it's pointing it out to the trainees that take the hardcore skills that this is what it is. This is how to perfect it. This is how to hone your skills. This is how to use communication to influence the outcome that you need. Mm. So that's essentially what I have to deliver.
And what an imperative part, like everything else.
Yes.
Where are you recruiting people?
Oh, that's a very big question. So there are a lot of youths that fit into the category we're looking at, the 16 to 25 year olds. Mm. And so far, we've been trying to reach out to them, working collaboratively with the council, with the DWP, with the job shops, with the various colleges around Barking and Dagenham.
So I'm wondering, what is the future of Blue Connections? Like, this is a pilot. Are you hoping that in the future this is going to be an annual thing? Do you want it to be more than once a year? Like, what's the ideal outcome for this?
What we're now doing, so we've been piloting the project for about 18 months. We Wow. spent the first 12 months within 2021, last year, and we were scuppered a little bit with the sort of ongoing effects of the pandemic. So we were quite slow to sort of pull all of the things that we needed to pull together. So there was some like delay in getting some of the comms materials ready, for example. And we realized we really needed to work with someone full time that was from within the community. And then we found the lovely Yomi through the community networks that we've been engaging with up to that date. Yeah. And also Wanda was spending basically all that time developing the hard skills modular program and trialing and testing it through some of our other active projects. So I'm sure Wanda can talk more about that in a bit, but so essentially, we've trialed and tested. We're happy where we are with what we've got. We've got an almost complete modular training program designed, most of it tested. And that's when that's round about in the summer was when we met Yomi, and she came on board with us just recently. And so we're now going headlong into recruitment. So from my point of view, my role in the project as technical director at TEP is partly, I work with Yomi and Wanda on the progress of the project, pushing it forward. But I also start to look at legacy. So legacy basically means what's after the funded period of 2 years, which comes to an end at the end of March, with the City Bridge Trust, who've been fantastic throughout all of this. They've been a really flexible funder, which if you're not used to fundraising, that is like gold, finding a funder who will basically trust you to pilot an approach, being uncertain whether it's actually going to work or not. So it's really quite rare that a funder will do that. So we're really thankful to the City Bridge Trust for giving us this opportunity. So they're keen, obviously, to see it become a success, because they can see that if it is successful, it could be a really innovative and new way of training and skills that could be scaled and replicated elsewhere. So scaled and replicated basically means you try it again. You do it on a bigger, in a bigger way with more trainees, and you do it in more areas. So I've started engaging with various organizations that I know are really skilled at delivering training and skills, but also engaging with young people, particularly young people not in education, employment or training. And we're just starting the conversations now to start co-developing and co-designing what the next steps would look like. But ideally, I'd want to basically do it all over again in Barking and Dagenham and do it across a longer period of time. So we've learned a lot along the way through this pilot. So I feel really confident that we can set it up to start earlier in the year, for example. So running the training program through summer to coincide with the end of the academic year. So we can reach people who are maybe either just about to go into college or just coming out of college or just coming out of school, for example. But also reaching those summer school initiatives that there's a lot is run by local community groups in certainly in Barking and Dagenham. So we want to do it all over again in Barking and Dagenham. And then we also want to look to replicate what we've done in another area. And we're currently looking at Thamesmead as a potential one, which has equal issues, equal challenges, similar kind of demographics. And looking to work with organisations that have a larger reach as well, that so they can reach into not just the Riverside boroughs, but really looking at all of the boroughs in the Greater London Authority area, because the river runs through almost every borough and all rivers lead to the Thames, leads to the ocean. So it's the kind of thing that if it's really successful, it could spark a new way of doing things. And then I'd look to also disseminate our learning and support others around the country if they're interested through the Coastal Partnership Network to look at, is this something that could resonate somewhere else and benefit coastal communities around the UK?
Excellent. How would you measure the success of the course?
We're going to do the monitoring of the impact through pre and post trainee programme surveys. That's probably the best way to put it. So basically, when you come on as a recruit, as an applying into the programme, we'll go through some survey questions with you. And some quite formal forms. So some of the target audience for this is, as I said, young people not in employment, education, or training. And that side of our funding is being supported by the European Skills Funding Agency, administered through Groundwork. So it is quite a formal process that we have to go through with that particular set of applicants. And then afterwards, we'll do follow-up surveys. And throughout, there'll be sort of check-ins. How are you getting on? How are you finding it? Are you enjoying it? You know, do you think this is going to help you find a job more easily? And really find out from them what further support we can give them as well. We can build in to the end of the project and take into the next phase, into the follow-on phase, so that we're learning all the way through as practitioners, as deliverers of the training and skills. But we really want to understand the trainee's journey. You know, like, how meaningful is this? How easy was it to access? How easy was it to work through it? What were the challenges? Where were the exciting things that come out of it? So we can basically do it better and bigger next time.
Yeah, so just wanted to highlight that some part of the modules have already been sort of tested and trialed. So we had before the Thames Catchment Community EOS project where I provided training for other organizations who were working with us on that project on GIS. And then currently we are providing a series of trainings to the RSPB trainees as part of their Greener Thames program. And with them, we already went through the introduction to the Thames SGU module, which was, I got great feedback on that actually, because they really enjoyed it. I really went into the biology, the ecology, the history. The history is actually very, the natural history part of the Thames is actually extremely interesting. And we all have to remember that London is here because of the Thames. And London's future is very much connected to the well-being of the Thames as well. So they went through that training already. And also we did fish survey, which they also enjoyed a lot, when the first seine net came back from the river, it was full of fish, and they all went like, oh, there's fish in the Thames. And I'm just going to finish with them the GIS part in November. So it's really good to have been able to do all this, because all the feedback that is coming back, whether it's negative or positive, it is all constructive in a way that we can refine it and improve it and make it better. And just want to highlight as well that for those who are applying for this particular program within the Blue Connections, we will do a little bit of testing and to see what are the existing skills already for those who are applying. So again, we can modify these modules and make sure that they actually learn from it all.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Is there any other things about Blue Connections that you'd like to tell us, team?
One of the most important things is that we have this sign up ongoing right now. So on the Thames Estuary Partnership website, which is thamesestuarypartnership.org, straight away when you land on the page, there will be this huge sort of a splash image jumping at you, and then you can navigate straight onto the corresponding page, and there is a apply section, which if you click on it, then it will take you to the, it's a short survey, the application form. You want to find out as much about the applicants as possible. And the deadline for that is the 18th of November.
Mm. Well, that's very exciting indeed. So if you are interested, please visit the website. If not, you can visit the show notes in this podcast where you can get a direct link to the application. We've already got a few people that are eagerly waiting to get started, which is very exciting. And I'm right in saying it's just us four that are going to be teaching. Is that correct?
Yes, I'll be delivering the data science, GIS, Thames Estuary, Microsoft Office part of it. Chloe, you will be focusing on the communication aspect.
True.
And Amy will be more on the fundraising, project planning side of it. Yeah. And then Yomi will be supporting throughout and do some side engagement with the participants on, okay, so what did you learn? How can you implement it? Is everything is clear, etc.
Love it. So dream team over here, everybody. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to get you all here chatting with me today. Thank you very much for all your time.
And thank you.
Let's do a Blue Connections high five. Yeah, thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
You've now reached the end of today's episode. I hope you've enjoyed listening and learning about Blue Connections. If you are interested in applying or sending over the project to friends or family, please go ahead and do so. All the details are found on our website, thamesestuarypartnership.org. And please don't be shy. Bring a friend along for the ride. It's going to be great fun. And who knows, you may be the next big podcaster. Thank you for joining me today. This podcast has been brought to you by me, Chloe Russell, on behalf of the Thames Estuary Partnership, and I look forward to welcoming you next time. Bye-bye.